Hello, and welcome to episode 31 of The Winning Agenda. Tonight, our panellists include runner-up for both the 2014 Melbourne Regionals and the 2014 Australian Nationals, Liam Prasad.
Hey there, how are we doing?
Runner-up for the 2015 Melbourne Regionals and three-time Magic the Gathering Pro Tour competitor, Wilfie Horrig.
Hey, that's me.
2014 Australian National Champion and 2014 World's Top 16 competitor, Jesse Marshall.
Great to be here.
2015 Regionals Top 8 competitor and the best-dressed man in Netrunner, Hollis Echo.
Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled Paige Piper.
And I'm Brian Holland, 2014 Australian Nationals Top 8 competitor. So, as a bit of a continuation of our discussion last week on the gauntlet, we thought we'd go a bit deeper both into that topic and to some other topics that tie in on it. For those of you that may have missed the gauntlet conversation, Wilfie, can you just quickly recap it for us?
Yeah, so what I was saying last week, don't worry, the episodes are self-contained, so we'll talk about it now, that the gauntlet is a theory of playtesting where you try and build decks which are going to be the most common, try and pick a very limited number, and just try and get a deep understanding of the matchups rather than a more shallow understanding of a wider range of matchups like you might get by playing, say, a local tournament.
And we wanted to tie this into making decisions on deck choices. So, Jesse, why don't you start us off there? How do you go about, after you've sort of played through a gauntlet similar to how we did leading up to both regionals and nationals last year, about deciding which deck you're actually going to take to the tournament on the day?
Yeah, it's a really hard decision. A lot of the way that I do it tends to be based off how powerful I felt the decks were in the games I was playing. So last year, we spoke about this a very, very long time ago, but I'll just give a quick recap for those of you who weren't listening all those months ago. We mainly were testing sort of Andromeda and Kate on the runner side. This was in the lead up to Nationals last year, our Nationals, which is in September, I think. Andromeda and Kate, and then we had sort of Nearth Hub, Replicating Perfection, and I had a Building a Better World deck, which I ended up playing at Nationals. And I felt as though the Nearth Hub deck was obviously very powerful, but against the very aggressive tuned Andromeda decks that were tuned to beat Fast Advance because it was the most powerful deck, either Nearth Hub or HB, I felt as though the deck suffered, and that the Wayland deck, the Building a Better World deck that was focusing on Scorched, because Wayland was at an absolute nadir at that point, there was barely anybody playing it. Plascrete was a little bit rarer, and I felt as though that deck could sort of slip into a space in the metagame and catch some runners unaware. So on the day of the tournament, I was sitting there with my deck registration sheets, and I had both the Building a Better World deck and the Nearth Hub deck written out, and I thought, bugger it, I'm going to take a chance, and I went with the Wayland deck because I made a metagame call, essentially. I have to caution you that making those sorts of metagame calls is not just something that I would do based on people not expecting me to play what I'm going to play. You also need to be confident with playing the deck, which I was because I'd played it through the store championship season as well. And you need to be confident that the deck is also going to perform in matchups where maybe they do have a plus grade, or maybe they do have the answer, or they're not, you get the meta call wrong. So you don't want to just be punished completely for making the wrong meta call and play a lower power deck that might be good against one particular archetype.
Yeah, just on that first thing there, certainly the first thing you should consider when choosing to play a deck or not to play a deck is whether or not you have experience with it, a deep understanding of the deck and how it plays and executes, where its little niches are, its advantages and weaknesses are, and why it is tuned the way it is. And that's something you'll put together as you're testing in the gauntlet. But, you know, a gauntlet with four or six decks could also contain four or six people. And something we found was that, or something I found at least, was that even though the Wayland deck that Jesse took to at Nationals had been in the gauntlet for the entire time, and I'd had lots of opportunities to play against it, because I'd never picked it up and played it myself, I didn't really have an understanding of the soft points, the pressure points that the deck suffers from. And so that weakened my matchup to it, and also meant that I couldn't, on the day, audible into playing it if I felt the metagame more desired that choice, which Jesse did, and he had the opportunity because he had played it to death. Learning your deck inside out is imperative to actually taking it to an event.
Hollis, what about you? Have you had a chance to throw sort of a gauntlet together? You did mention before the episode that you do tend to test with just a small number of guys, and if so, how do you use that information to then make a deck choice for a big tournament like a regionals or a store champs?
often what I end up doing is simply paying attention to the sort of online presence that's there with a lot of the deck choices people are using. So whether it's checking on like an online forum or like some sort of like deck list, you know, website or something like that, I'm looking at what I believe is to be the most popular deck archetypes that I'll see during like a competitive tournament like that. And then my friends and I will make all those decks and we'll just play them back and forth a couple of times until we kind of get a feel for, you know, every single deck that we feel is going to be, like, I guess, best represented. And, I mean, that gives you two main big advantages, right? You get to, number one, you get to play the decks that you're pretty confident are going to be the right one to go with, depending on the meta you're going into. And number two, you're getting this experience from these other really competitive decks that you're likely to see. So you kind of take, you know, it's your advantage, really, to take that course of action and play the most competitive decks that you think are going to win. When looking at a area that that I'm, you know, I don't normally live where I'm attempting to assess the actual deck archetypes that are prominent there, what I will do is I will actually go as far as to reaching out to the members of the community of that city and state. For example, for you gentlemen, if I was going to be in a tournament in Australia, I would speak with you and ask you, you know, hey, you guys, you know, what's really being represented that I wouldn't expect to see in a competitive, you know, in a competitive Netrunner environment. And then, of course, all of you would basically lie to me so they make sure when I got there, I would have no chance in hell. But, I mean, I think that's important. I mean, the community's really friendly about that kind of thing. So if you really want to know, you know, hey, what's everyone playing in Australia? What's everyone playing in France? What everyone's playing in Belgium? I think it's simply reaching out to those forums and talking to those players will get you a lot of information to help you make, you know, a decision for the kind of deck you need to build for that meta.
Wilfie, when you have been diving into the gauntlet before a tournament like Nationals or Regionals, and you find that one of the decks that you had brought along and that you were fairly confident with maybe wasn't going as well as you hoped it would after maybe a few hours of testing and a bunch of different matchups, what's your usual strategy there? Do you go back to the drawing board with the deck? Do you just toss the deck around and maybe pick up one of the decks that your friends nearby have been doing well with in the gauntlet, or do you just tune it?
It's a kind of combination of all of those factors, but the most important thing is to understand why it's not doing well, and that can kind of inform what you're going to do in the future. Like, usually decks have, you know, a lot of room to tune. And so it's not always going to be the case that just because the specific cards that you're playing are not perfectly positioned that you can't get the deck up to a point where it can be good. But of course there's the kind of thing where even if it can be good, it's not necessarily the case that the time spent on it is going to be worthwhile. So it's a kind of multi-layered approach where you have to trust that the core is good and then sort of work the, you know, smaller factors and try and manipulate them to get something which is better tuned to the specific decks that you're likely to play against. So, for example, if I have a deck that maybe isn't going so well for a particular reason, then maybe if it's not a major strategic thing, like maybe the ice ratio is a bit off, or maybe I don't have enough economy, then, and that's causing me to be not so great against, say, for example, if my ice ratio was too low, then I would face some issues against more aggressive decks, then maybe I try and change that a little bit. But it's very important that, you know, in changing one thing, you don't ruin what makes the deck strong in the first place. So, you know, because every time you add a card, you have to cut a card, really. And so, you know, you can, it's a kind of balancing act to make sure that, you know, if the strategy is good, then you try and build the cards to be good around the strategy. And if the strategy isn't good or isn't well positioned, then maybe you have to do something more drastic. But, you know, if you have a good testing process, then it shouldn't be necessarily too difficult to change to another deck that you hopefully have some experience with by this point as well.
One of the things that I found really, really valuable about our gauntlet process last year was learning how to play with the decks that I was most comfortable with against a wider variety of other decks and understand when to press the button. So, you know, as the Corp, understanding what your role is in every game. We spoke about this in our Who's the Beatdown episode. We spoke about this in our control, mid-range, and aggressive discussions. Just understanding what role you have to play in each matchup. As the Corp, do you have to try and win early, or can you force the game to go late and try and win then and just bleed the runner out? You know, really understanding that in every single matchup, because it will differ based on where your deck and your opponent's deck sit on the spectrum.
I guess something that we've been coming up and prepping towards our gauntlet for this season has been just a wild season of exploration. Wilfie and Jesse and I and Brian, we've all been working, and Hollis too, we've all been working on really experimental, out-of-the-ballpark decks and just trying to establish, just like Wilfie was saying, what are the core cards or what are the core synergies in strategies that we can tune to be powerful. I think when you come into a season where you do have to test proficiently and it is a gauntlet season, unless a deck just comes out of the web, just pops out of the ether and is just amazing, you really don't really have the capacity to be experimenting when you could be testing and tuning the strategies that you have. That's for the off season.
And can I just say as well, because I'm sure there's a few people listening who are a bit like me, that this experimental season as a competitive player is actually, I've got a love-hate thing with it. I like playing, you know, a bit of more of an experimental deck, but when it leads up to something like a store champ season, or especially, you know, coming up to our regional season at the moment, I really don't like not knowing what the four or five maybe best decks are in the format. Unlike when we were at Nationals, it was fantastic because it was just like, these are the five best decks, you know, and I'm going to just thrash my matchups with them at the moment. But at the moment, things are still sort of all over the place. There's great new cards coming out, which is obviously fantastic for the game. A lot of experimentation going on, which is great for the game as well. But as a competitive player, I don't like not necessarily knowing which are the best decks to test against, which makes assembling the gauntlet both very tedious and extremely important.
It's all part of the cycle, you know. As the regionals season develops, we'll see, you know, what creams to the top, what rises to the top and what falls down below, and all those experimental shells, some of those strategies might find themselves similar enough to be coalesced into one deck. Some decks might be split off and diverge, some might just outright die. So, you know, like, that's part of the reason we build and experiment so much, so that we can just throw it all up against the wall and see what sticks. And, you know, when one deck's doing well, it becomes a suspect. We put it into the gauntlet, and if it can't beat anything in there, we knock it back out.
And what about you, Shilzy? I know that in the past, maybe you've actually said that you like to get a feel for the room before you choose the decks you want to take into your tournament. Granted, some of those cases might have been because you'd already won a store champs and you weren't particularly invested in trying to get to the top once again. How do you go about maybe deciding the deck that you're going to play out of the five or six that we've narrowed the gauntlet down to? Is there any factors outside of just the meta call, or is it really just come down to your preferred playstyle?
Oh, preferred playstyle is definitely a big thing. Like, you definitely want to be playing a deck that you enjoy playing, because that's the entire motivation, right? If the motivation is just to win so that you can go to Worlds and go to Nationals and play another deck you don't enjoy, then I don't really understand that, because the prize pool isn't that deep. So in my eyes, the core motivation should be to play a deck that you enjoy playing and that you have experience with and that you know back to front. So when the season comes a little bit later, when you have whittled your gauntlet of 30 or 35 experimental decks down to 7 or 8 that you know will stand the test of the season, that's when you can really say that you have a feel for the room. But up until that point, you know, maybe it's just that you know 4 people are rocking up and they all like NBN. This young part of the season, in store champ season, everything's kind of random. We're all experimenting, and just like Hollis was saying about StimHack, when a card like the Au Revoir deck crops up and everyone loves it, that's the next deck you're going to see. It's very much in the flavor of the month. But time will tell, and the regional season will push the format into 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 core decks.
So for people that are sitting at home listening right now and they're thinking they want to get their gauntlet together, but, you know, maybe they only have 3 friends that play Netrunner, maybe they have, you know, 10 or 12 friends that play Netrunner, how should they go about assembling their group in terms of capacity? So how many players should they have? And then going from there, like, how should they set the player skill level of the gauntlet itself?
Yeah, exactly. So it's the good thing about this sort of testing process is that it's very flexible. You can have as many as from as few as 2 people to really as many people as you want, as long as you divide tasks efficiently. Since your overall goal with the gauntlet is to, you know, get some understanding about matchups and try and work out what decks you're going to play, one common thing that I like to do is have, say, pair people and have them play one matchup each, and then, you know, swap around and kind of make some notes on what sort of cards or what sort of how the matchup goes in particular and what sort of things are important. So, for example, is it a matchup where you need a conserve resources and eventually the runner will make, you know, some large runs on R&D, or is it a matchup where you want to draw early to try and find icebreakers and, you know, be kind of make sure that you have the answers to get into remotes early or something like that. And so no matter how many people you have, if you make some notes on that kind of thing and try and, you know, often discussing is as useful as playing games, especially in combination. And so if you have lots of people, you know, that sort of process of having people play games and then swap, discuss, and, you know, share knowledge can be really effective in terms of very quickly getting people up to speed. And, you know, in a scaled down way, even if you have like you can even have two people through Octagon or through real life. You don't even need anyone else in the same room as you. You can test on Octagon or JintekiNet, you know, do the same thing. Load a matchup between you and your opponent and just play games and try and work out what's important. And so, you know, you can, no matter whether you have very few people or very many people, you can have this process be effective for you.
Can I ask, Wilfie, when you have a few people in your gauntlet, one of the challenges is to, particularly at the moment with the wide variety of decks in the meta, have all the decks built at one time? You know, when you rock up for an afternoon and you want to play some games with your friends and try and cover all these decks, if there's only three or four of you, how, with the limited card pool of this LCG format, do you go about making sure you can actually physically build all of those decks in an efficient way?
I think it's possibly the most difficult at the moment, given that Doppelganger is actually playable now.
I'll just continue saying with what I was going to say. So yeah, that's a good point. And you know, there are a couple things you can do. One is proxy decks, and you know, you can do this many different ways. For those who don't know, a proxy is to make a copy of a card, like, you know, print out a card and put it in a sleeve with a Netrunner back.
Or you can whip out your 8th grade art class sketches like Jesse Marshall does and just draw the card yourself.
Or you can use another card that is similar in some respect, or you can just write, like I do, I just write a letter on the back of a card, and, you know, C is my daily cast.
When it comes to making proxies, it's about finding a bit of balance with your play group and making sure that knowledge is always, everybody always knows what everything is. So if you say that I've only got one proxy in my deck, it's daily casts, it's a regular card with a D written on the back, then they know. But if every one of your proxies is just a different letter, it's hard for someone to play at the same capacity they normally can, because they can't just really tell what you've got on the board at a single glance. The most efficient proxies are ones that are printed out and cut up. I hate proxies just as a rule, but I mean, obviously they're necessary for things like the gauntlet.
Well, anyway, as you can see, there's some difference of opinion, but I think we'll all agree that, you know, proxying is generally a good thing to do when you're trying to have multiple decks built and trying to, you know, make the gauntlet process as fast and as efficient as possible.
Do make proxies. Don't not make proxies because you're worried that people won't understand or like them. Like, having proxies is really the only way that you can actually run an efficient gauntlet without doing heaps of swaps in and out of decks of common cards.
Yeah, and like, the aim is not to beat your opponent right now. Your aim is for you and your opponent to learn something about the game so that when the time is important, you both have a better opportunity at winning the tournament. So like, if you feel dirty about a loss because your opponent had a magic card with the letter C written on the back rather than their daily cards, and I don't know, maybe like you could sort out your tilt or something.
Another thing which I've heard many times before is this idea of, you know, if I'm not so experienced with Netrunner in as a whole, but I want to go to a tournament anyway, that's great. Is there any specific sort of strategy which I can, you know, which would be better for me? And I would say, you know, there's a bit of difference of different perspectives here, but I would say that, you know, if you maybe don't know all the cards that most corps or runners play and are just sort of dipping your toes into the tournament scene, then it might serve you well to play a more linear deck, like a deck which kind of just executes your game plan and what your opponent does is a bit less relevant. Like, for example, if you're trying to play something like Stealth Andy against, you know, an opponent where, you know, the matchup's always going to be very complicated and you always have to interact with them because Stealth Andy is a reactive deck. Like, they set the pace of the game and you have to try and follow them, and if you can do that successfully, then you'll probably win. And so that might not be that good for a beginner for a couple of reasons. One is that, you know, as the game goes longer, you're going to have to maneuver your way around more decisions. And the other is that if you play something like Stealth Andy, basically everyone is going to know how to play against Stealth Andy and play against people who are, you know, quite competent. And if you maybe don't have the time or the experience to play it at optimal level, that's still okay, but it might be more effective to play a deck that's more linear, where you don't have to worry about as many moving parts at once. And that's something which is reasonable. It's okay to just to accept that, you know, if you can win playing more linear decks, even if they might not be as even if people might not think they're as powerful. If you do one thing and you do it efficiently, then you can easily win games, even if you're not super confident with managing all the things that Netrunner has.
And you're saying that one thing should be something proactive.
Yeah, so like you should do something. Yeah, like the
noise. I think noise is a good example.
Yeah, where you just kind of do your thing, and it doesn't matter as much what they're doing. And you know, as long as you know the core things, like when to get into remotes, when to start running and stuff, and when to turn your economy into action, then you don't have to, it's not as complicated as some other decks can be.
Yeah, like the old slow key lists.
Yeah, you're basically just building up your rig and your R&D access, your R&D interfaces until you can get in for big accesses. Obviously, with any deck, there's going to be advantages to understanding the subtlety of your opponent's play, and those are things that you can only pick up with experience. But in terms of compensating for your inexperience with a playstyle that is more suited to that, definitely playing a more proactive deck that's going to play more consistently regardless of the matchup is a better idea.
Is there something you wanted to add, Hollis, in terms of maybe your playtesting group and playtesting experiences?
When it really comes down to, like, I guess for newer players, I think what we try to do in our local group is that whenever we have a newer player, we attempt to, number one, sort of flood them with a lot of the competitive decks that are out there. And I think for a newer player initially, it's not initially seeing how those decks are as effective or why they're as effective. And so a lot of times we'll say, hey, this is what this deck does. This is the reason why this deck works. Here, take this. We've built this already. I'm going to play my deck, my runner deck versus this corp deck that you haven't seen before. And I want you to give this a test run. And it sort of gives them the sort of basis to understand, all right, well, this would make that deck competitive. This is how it kind of has to be piloted. And you can give that deck sort of like one-on-one advice. Even if they never really quite catch up to it because they're not at the level in the game yet, at that point, they kind of understand, or they're starting to get how the economy of the deck works and why that makes it as effective as it is. You guys have had, deck building and new player ideas in one of your different in an earlier episode that you've done, and I think a lot of the same approach we have as far as how we handle the competitive scene for newer players and how we, you know, how that first new player gets used to that new tournament falls in line with a lot of the things you guys said. It's better to play something kind of straightforward, even if it's something that's well-known competitively. It's better to have that one thing they're really good at and say, all right, just remember this one thing, do your best to do this, and even if you're not really experienced versus a lot of matchups, you'll still do pretty decently, just doing the thing you know you have to do, even without knowing all the cards, without all of the information. And you'll see that in tournaments where people can do well as a result from sticking to their guns and playing how they know the deck is supposed to be played without all that information.
Yeah, and I think it is about getting that deep knowledge of one deck. You know, we can play every aspect of the gauntlet and learn every matchup back to front, but I think, as a newer player, for every game I've ever played, at some point the way that was best for me was just to play the one deck over and over against everything else in the field. And even if I couldn't tell you exactly how two other lists interacted or exactly what that matchup was like, that was okay, because I knew what I was going to take to the event well ahead of time. The thing is, if there are enough players that are new in a room that will come with this similar perspective, that gives us a broader outlook on how the metagame might look, especially for events like regionals or nationals that are quite large. They bring people out of their houses and bring people into town from
Who normally wouldn't play.
Yeah, people who normally wouldn't play that much, and they'll go out of their way. They'll say, well, I want to play either my pet deck or I want to choose a deck that I think is competitive. But just like you're saying, Wolfie, it fits a certain number of criterions.
Or they'll play their pet deck that they think is competitive.
Well, yeah, but,
Sure, yeah.
I mean, just as a general rule, if it didn't make its way into your gauntlet, then...
Yeah.
But because that's what the experimental season is for like, putting all the lists together.
So, in summary, the advantages of the gauntlet, I guess if we could list them, are that you... Whatever deck you end up taking to the tournament, you're going to have a wider variety of experience against other top decks. And I think we can all... agree that every single game we play, we learn something new about a card interaction or about a strategy or a thing that we could do a little bit better and optimize our play just that little bit more. And doing that against a wide variety of decks in the field is really what's going to give you that edge going into the tournament. Then you've got the advantages that you gain of trying out those different decks, which helps with the deck selection. So you get that twin sort of benefit, I guess, of helping with your deck selection, but then also helping to optimize your play on the day, whatever you choose.
Excellent. That's about all we have time this week for the winning agenda. If you want to get in contact with us, maybe let us know how your gauntlet testing is going, or if you have any questions about the gauntlet testing concept, you can shoot us an email at thewinningagenda@gmail.com. Check us out on Facebook. Our like page is The Winning Agenda. Or you can hit us up on Twitter at Winning Agenda. Additionally, if you're enjoying our podcast and you'd like to support us a little bit, you can jump onto Inked Playmats, search The Winning Agenda, and pick yourself up a sweet, sweet Winning Agenda playmat. You can see some photos of Jesse sporting it at Worlds 2014 online. Thanks so much, guys. We'll speak to you soon.
Take it easy.
Thanks, guys.
Have a great day.
Thanks very much.
No problem. I'm also going to purchase one of these damn playmats.